Hour number three of 3D on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good start to your week. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick with you. D-Mace will be back with us on Wednesday. We, at this time every Monday, head to East Tennessee. We head to Knoxville. Vince Ferrara, WNML in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. Vinny, how you doing? How was your weekend?
It was okay, a little under the weather, so trying a little bit better today. So you may get salty vents today, so just FYI.
I'm okay with salty vents.
Hope you guys had a good weekend.
Yeah. Well, I guess let's start with the early game, the 11 a.m. our time kickoff. Now 10 quarters and counting since the Vols have been able to score a touchdown. It's pretty amazing how inept their offense have been. Let's just start with you being there, being in the house. What was the mood like at Neyland Stadium?
Well, the crowd was okay. It wasn't send out red alerts, look at the half-empty Neyland Stadium for South Carolina. Some, I think, projected and wondered whether it would look like that. It did not. I think there were some empty seats, but I think a realistic estimate of human beings in there, probably in the 90,000-ish range. That's obviously, 12 and change short of capacity, but it's not a complete disaster like it could have been. So that was step one. Two, there's just anxiety there. It was Tennessee got off to a decent start, but then offensively after the first couple drives, but you could tell when they started kicking field goals, the anxiety ramped up and it continued. So it wasn't an electric crowd. It was one that expected things to go wrong. And there was some initial excitement, obviously, with Jared Garantano, but the failures in the red zone, especially inside the 10, the 5-yard line, continue to hurt this team. The numbers are really, really, really ugly.
Yeah, why are they so bad in the red zone? So bad.
Yeah, Butch Jones was asked about it in post game. Was asked about it today. He points to what we commonly hear, and that's execution. Just one breakdown here, execution one time, it's not holding your block as long. Another time it's not getting out of a break, and just different things like that. To me, there are some execution breakdowns, guys not being able to hang on to the football, but I have a problem with their play calling. And John Kelly in 24 plays they've run this year inside the opponent's 10-yard line.
He doesn't touch the ball.
He has 6 rushes in 24 plays.
Yeah, that's not acceptable.
in 12 plays inside the 5-yard line, he has 4 rushes. So you're only going to him a third of the time. Unacceptable. And I know, look, they don't trust their offensive line to be the physical force that they wanted him to be, but he overcomes that so many other times. Give him the football. And I asked Khalil about it today, Khalil McKenzie, put a fullback in there to lead the way if you need to. Put Khalil McKenzie in there. Do something. That's one of the biggest problems with this coaching staff is they don't have answers. They typically, when someone has a reaction to Tennessee's success, teams have that reaction and Tennessee doesn't have a counter reaction and they don't have an adjustment. In the red zone, they had Jared Garantano rolling out to the boundary short side of the field.
Yep, short side of the field. Amazing.
On a rollout. Where's he going to run?
And Tommy Tuberville was absolutely all over them on the broadcast going, what are they doing? Why are they rolling him out to the short side of the field?
They called on one of those final plays of the game, they threw a fade to their shortest receiver in Josh Smith in the back corner. That was the designed call from the far hash. That's what you're going to do? On the final, there was a third down play where they ran a – well, actually, no, it was the third down, the final play of the game. They rolled Garantano out, but not without a run option. Just this team, even beyond the red zone, so many just mind-boggling, head-scratching decisions on play calls, a third and one, and you roll out Garantano again to the short side of the field with no receiver there. So it's I think that's a big reason why this team has had struggles, not giving it to John Kelly, those play calling decisions, and the offensive line just isn't good enough, but you still have to find answers and find ways. And it's brutal, their ineptitude in that red zone. And I even laid it out in a blog on our website, sportsradiownml.com. I ran through and studied all 24 of those plays inside the 10 and inside the 5. And the more you study it, the harder it is to comprehend.
Joey Galloway, after the game, had some real damning comments to me about this coaching staff. Joey Galloway said right out of the gates after the Tennessee game went final, when they went back to the studio, he says, I don't see a Tennessee team that's lacking talent. I see talent out there. He goes, I see a Tennessee team that isn't being coached up. It's more lacking coaching the talent. I thought that was real damning comments for Butch Jones and his staff.
This team is not as talented as it was last year, but they're still top 4, top 5, top 6 in terms of recruiting talent that a lot of other teams wanted. You know, there's a gap. There's Alabama on it by itself. There's Georgia, and there's a gap to everyone else. But then, you know, there's the LSUs, the Auburns, the Tennessees, and the Florida kind of in that next group. And Tennessee is right there in that next group, that third tier, in terms of talent that has not lived up to expectations, whether it's guys not staying healthy, guys being bust, whatever it is, either you recruited the wrong guys or you haven't developed those guys. You know, they're wide receivers, and Derek probably has talked about it. The wide receivers don't run crisp routes. They give away their breaks. They can't get off press coverage. The only reason Tennessee was able to get anything going on the final drive is because South Carolina played off. When they played press man, Tennessee's receivers couldn't get off. They couldn't get open down the field. That's why Jared Garantano was holding on to the football so long, because they didn't have any open receivers. And their receivers just do not have the they're not fundamentally sound in their route running, and they can't get off press coverage. And the book is out on what to do with them. It's 5 yards of offense prior to that final drive when South Carolina's playing off. So, and you can point to a lot of other areas as well. They don't trust their personnel. That's another huge issue. That's why the defense gasses out late in games, because they've gone the whole season not playing their young players, and then they don't trust them to put them in a critical situation. So the guys just have to go back out there, and that's what happens. But Butch Jones today was talking about, you know, execution, you know, run fit and this and that.
How can he bring up execution when he told everybody who would listen how great of a bye week they had? I mean, he talked about how great of a bye. How is execution a problem if you had such a great bye week? And, oh, by the way, wasn't he asked about playing better coming off the bye week? And isn't that the clip we've been seeing circulating around, where you're saying, what, you don't think they're a good football team? Was it that the question?
That was the question. Why didn't you guys execute better coming off of the bye week when you felt so good about it? And, yeah, their response was, what, we didn't play a good team? We got better. We're a really good team. So, that was his response.
I feel like this is such a broken record. I've said this just for so many. He just doesn't get it. He just doesn't. I mean, I can't say it any more times. He just doesn't get it. It's year 5, and he still says these ridiculous things. He gets caught up in these just silly comments. And at a program like Tennessee in the SEC with that fan base in year five, it's just so unacceptable that he just doesn't get it by now.
Darren, you know what we need at Butch Jones press conferences? We need someone, I don't know, someone like Darren McFarlane in the back of the room with like a buzzer to set off whenever he says something that most of the fans don't want to hear.
Like, well, the problem is he wouldn't be able to finish the press conference. And what's sad, and I said this earlier, Vince, and you know this, you know my setup, you know my wife is a UT grad. I've got family members. I've got a lot of friends that are huge UT fans. So I'm certainly tuned in to the program and what's going, the pulse of the fan base. He's just making a mockery of the program because of all this. It gives all this material for all the other fan bases just to constantly rip Tennessee to shreds over his silly comments because, yet again, he still can't figure out what he says, you know, what's going to happen when he makes those type of comments, because he told everybody how great of an – it was the best bye week ever. And then he comes out and says, well, that was a really good football team, and we didn't execute. Well, you just told us how great of a bye week, how great practice was. It doesn't mix. It doesn't match. It makes no sense for the stuff that he says. He's all over the place with his comments.
Yes. And, Darren, another thing that he said going into the bye week was that there was no starting positions. Everything was in the open, and it was up for competition, every single position. They changed quarterback, and they kept their offensive line for the second straight game, so technically they didn't change that. I can't think of another, other than kicker, because their starting kicker is sick. I don't know what else they changed. I don't think they changed anything else. So they didn't trust any backups earlier in the year. So not going into the bye week now, it's all up in the air. Well, apparently it was not, because either those young players aren't good enough or they don't trust them enough to play them. And it was the same afterwards on the back end of that bye week. So they didn't really benefit from finding new guys and a new trust level. You know, they had Daryl Taylor suspended. So Matthew Butler played a couple of additional snaps at defensive end, but nothing significant. Their solution was, all right, we're down at defensive end. Okay, now our two of the three guys that we rotate, you guys have to play virtually every snap. And when we need you, we need you to slide inside and be at tackle sometimes too. That was their solution. So it's just it's difficult for all these things. Now the leadership reps is what they're getting made fun of, the new thing. So it's just a lot of things that just are piling on to the lack of success this program has had, not in overall wins, which is what they want to trot out, but in the SEC, where they've now lost seven of their last nine in Southeastern Conference play.
Vince Ferrara is with us. We're talking about Tennessee. Butch Jones has had his Monday press conference coming off the tough loss to South Carolina. Vince, the thing that jumped out to me, well, and I want to come back to Garantano here in just a moment, but It had to be disappointing that they allowed South Carolina to basically just run for the most part and control the clock and eventually take the lead and really leave very little time left for Tennessee on that final drive down the stretch. They pretty much controlled the line of scrimmage in the second half.
Definitely, but this is something that you can see happening, you've seen happening before, where the defense wears down because they have to play the same guys. And some number of guys admitted it. Butch Jones admitted it today that, yes, there was some fatigue. There's no answer to that because they don't play a lot of guys. Now, he points to lack of depth, but they decided not to play a lot of guys in the Indiana State game. They messed around with UMass, so they couldn't put a bunch of young guys in there, or chose not to. You can still mix them in there. So that the one thing leads to another, and then you're like, oh, this is a situation, but there may have been ways to prevent those situations. So I think that's the biggest reason. I'm not going to pin it on, you know, just a run fit here, or, you know, this and that. South Carolina was the more physical team throughout that entire game, and then they finally wore on them. So that's what you're going to get from this defense. I think that's been something, a regular thing that we've seen.
It's so important for them, I would think, that Garantano continues to get better. I saw the quote from Butch Jones this morning. Broad energy, plenty to learn, lots of positives. So let's go through that. In the positives, I did think that in the frenzy late and all of the craziness where they, you know, they were late getting the play in, they were lucky to get the last play off, he did throw a pretty good ball on the last play that I thought could have been caught. It was not an easy catch by any means, but it hit him in the hands.
Yes. I think you're right. I think Garantano was among a handful of very encouraging things from that game. And I can come back to a couple of the other guys that are playing well in a bit. But, yes, I thought Garantano showed pretty well. Obviously had some difficulties at times, ball security and you know, holding on to the football probably too long, some things like that that the young guys that are in their first start are going to do. But, yeah, his poise at the end was a plus. He admitted in the post game that he really likes being in that one-minute situation. You know, can Tennessee try to do more of that during a game? I think so. You know, I saw a couple of times where Tennessee was a third and one particular time. I think they had a run for like 7 yards to make it third and one. Garantano's looking at the sideline and rotating his arms like, let's hurry up, let's get the play in. And that was immediately after they spotted the ball. And they didn't get the playoff until under 10 seconds left to go on the play clock. He wants to go at one pace. Everyone else is going at a different pace, maybe because they don't trust him or whatever it is. So I think he is comfortable in those wide open, I'm just going to play grounded type of situations. And, you know, the coaching staff, they're the ones that needed to direct him to spike it there at the end. Butch Jones said that it had no factor in the game. It didn't cost him any time. It did. It cost him 8-9 seconds. And as you alluded to, Willie, if they don't get the home clock,
as Tommy Tuberville put out there, yeah, he used that term right away.
Absolutely. I mean, that ball didn't even hit the ground before it had stopped. And so had you not gotten that extra play, then the 8 or 9 seconds would have been another play that you would have needed. It didn't factor in because they stopped the clock with 1 second, but had it been normal, then it would have cost them one play and the criticism would have intensified. But as far as Garantano, his ability to make plays with his feet, scramble, save negative plays, they weren't big yards, but I thought they were positive yards. It's just the totality, the physicality of the game, took its toll on the offensive line. In the second half, he had nowhere to go. But I think overall he did have some really nice throws, some encouraging things. I don't think they trusted him either. I think they tried not to give him too much. So all of that factored in into the numbers being ugly. But I think when you just look at Garantano in a bubble, brought some energy to, I think he it was at least a positive first start for Garantano.
When we come back, a little bit more on our observations about Garantano. And we'll also look ahead to the Alabama game on Saturday. We're talking with Vince Ferrara, Sports Radio WNML in Knoxville, our weekly chat about the Vols. Later this hour, your chance to win Predator tickets to their home game tomorrow night against the Colorado Avalanche, who, by the way, are 4-2 to start the year. So a big game tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena. And we'll also talk about the controversy in the loss in overtime in Chicago on Saturday. Stay tuned. We've got a lot more coming this hour. You're listening to 3D here on 102.5 The Game. We're back here talking with Vince Ferrara on 3D. He is with Sports Radio WNML in Knoxville. Our weekly chat with him about the Big Orange who take on Alabama this week. Vince, another observation I had about Garantano. That's the first time I'd really watched him extensively. And he's got a rocket. There's no question. He really can hum it. My question is, how much can be done, and this may be a long-term question, but I know everybody's worried week to week here, but touch throws, a little more touch, a little more variety, changing speeds on some of the throws he makes. Is that something you see?
Yes, and it's been something that has been an area he's needed to work on for a while since we've seen him. It was a topic before the season, and some of the receivers noted that he'd break their hands. Maybe not literally, but it's different with some of those throws where he just has not one speed, where Quinn Dormady had a little bit more of an understanding of when to dial it back some and have the touch. And then, he has a good arm too, then he'd crank it. So, yeah, that's that touch, that feel part of it is just something he hasn't had it, been able to advance just from game reps. I think he'll be able to get it, but it is something they're working on, and I think he's aware of too.
The concern you mentioned earlier of the ball security, where he's holding, he's
no
looking.
No question. He's got to get rid of the ball.
He was fortunate that he didn't have the catastrophic turnover there, and you think that now you put the Alabama defense in play there, that's got to be a very concerning thing. It's something that you don't want him to digress long term in a game like this where he's going to be under a lot of fire here. So I'm wondering how they will try to craft this game plan.
Well, it's a great question, because you don't want him David Card, basically.
Oh boy,
off of a
nice game. Example, and we all know what that means.
In a worst case scenario,
right?
Yes,
getting crushed relentlessly over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's that's not a favorable matchup. Even if this Alabama defense isn't as deep in the front seven as it has because of injuries and graduation and all that kind of fun stuff, but it's still ferocious, and they still have secondary people that can get to you and get to you quick with violence. And it's just not a good matchup at the line of scrimmage. And you just wonder about his physical health and then his mindset too, because of the beating he's likely to take in this game. And especially if you hold on to the football, and Alabama is so good, not only at taking the ball away, but turning it into points. Another issue that Tennessee is going to have that won't help Garantano is what we talked about with the receivers. If the receivers can't get open, they can't get off press coverage, well, guess what Alabama does well? They cover and they press they press you. So that doesn't look like it can end well either. He's got to find ways to get rid of the football. And then another problem with Alabama is, and I think maybe they would have had more opportunity to try to do some of it against South Carolina, but they won't do these things, is the quick passing game. Alabama will jump your routes, and they're so fast sideline to sideline that the teams that try to do that stuff, Arkansas tried to do it with the quick passing game with their first-time starting quarterback in Kelly, and that didn't work. Another thing you might try to help with that is some deep shots. Well, they don't really try those, whether it's a trust or knowing guys aren't going to get open or not, for whatever reason, we haven't really seen much of those. So it's just hard to see a scenario where Tennessee would have an answer to what Alabama's going to bring to the table, against a young quarterback.
He made some things that we've talked about, some mistakes, but you expect that out of a guy making his first collegiate start. What jumped out at me, and I know, albeit in a loss, still, when you look moving forward, his upside to Dormady, it's not even close. It's in my opinion, it's just not even close. I mean, Garantano just has more weapons in his holster than Dormady.
But the question is now going to become, how much better will he get from now for another year? And I'll use Kyle Shermer as an example. When he was thrust in there as a true freshman,
he struggled,
but he was still better than what they had.
Right.
But the key is he's gotten better every year.
Where he's not going to get better? On the bench. That's where he's not going to get better.
Right. So it looks like, and Vince, the vibe I'm getting is that they're going to go with Garantano here. He's shown enough that they're not going to now go back to Dormady. But the key is he's got to show progress, and they've got to continue to develop him.
No, I don't think they'll go back to Dormady unless one of two things happens. Unless Garantano turns into a turnover machine, like 3 or 4 and a half, or his helmet keeps coming off.
Yeah, what is the deal with that? Let's get some tighter straps.
Yeah, they did end up tightening it up after the second time. If that's when – and how about – how about Quentin Dormady? The first time he came in, they run that zone, the zone read, and he
kept
keeps it.
He kept it
absolutely wide open for like 8 yards, and you knew he was like, "I'm going to show them. I'm keeping this ball." So didn't happen the second time, but no, they'll ride forward Garantano. His playmaking ability with his legs. He's not Josh Dobbs, but at least he can save them from negative plays. Tennessee is second to last, or 13th in the SEC in tackles for loss against them. And so they have way too many negative plays as it is. He at least, especially in the first half, was able to keep drives alive. In fact, late in that first half, he had a couple of runs that ended up being first downs. And he brings energy to the team as well. Butch Jones kind of pointed to that. He'd get fired. He was getting fired up numerous times. So he brings that dimension that at least can save them with their offensive line. Dormady just has not been mobile enough to survive them. And they don't have enough, and I think I've used this phrase with you guys, they don't have enough erasers on their team. Guys, Butch Jones talking about all 11 and all this, that's not realistic football. You're not going to have everyone doing all their jobs on every single play. You need guys that can overcome mistakes and can make plays of and overcome mistakes of others to make it positive for the team. They just don't have enough of those guys. At least he brings that element to help them out.
All right, let's talk about what's really being discussed right now. Okay, let's finish up with the real meat and potatoes here. Where is this going with Butch Jones? I mean, the feedback I get from everybody that I talk to that certainly roots hardcore for the Vols. Everything you see, or a lot of things you see out there, I don't want to say everything, a lot of people have moved on, and that's a bad place for a head coach to be. They have moved on from Butch Jones. This Tennessee team is a 35-point underdog. The gap never, and I mean never, between Tennessee and Alabama football should ever be 5 touchdowns. The gap is 5 touchdowns right now. And today, if you're asking me, I'd take Bama minus the points. Where is this going? What's your opinion on Butch Jones's future and where it's at today? A lot of people saying, you know, when is this? It's inevitable. Go on and pull the plug. What do you think?
Well, you already, and this has been obviously an issue before with fans voicing their disdain. I don't think I've ever seen it that way for a Tennessee coach, and people that have been here, you know, longer than I have say the same thing, that they don't think they've ever seen this much negativity towards a coach. Obviously, the world is different. Social media is different just from, you know, when Butch Jones was hired. So that's a big factor. But, you know, Butch Jones points to the media and what do we want from our media, all that kind of stuff. But it's fans that are starting fake accounts saying that John Curry had a press conference.
Yep.
That's not the media doing that. That's your fan base. That should tell you an awful lot.
Didn't they use Ryan Callahan's account? Didn't they use Ryan Callahan as the fake account?
Ryan Callahan, Go Balls Extra, which is a Knoxville New Sentinels account. They had fake accounts for numerous outlets. And so people see that and they start buying in. That's not the media. That's just another indication that it's the fans that are mad at you. The media is just the go-between the two sides. But I don't see a way out of it. I mean, you're going to lose to Alabama, and now you're below 500, 0-4 in the SEC, lost 8 of 10 in the SEC. Your SEC record will fall overall in your career to 14 and 22. I mean, Brett Bielema, that's Brett Bielema range. You're already 8 and 10 in SEC home games. You haven't scored a touchdown in 10 straight quarters. By the way, all of those quarters at home. So the numbers will continue to mount and how ugly it'll be. And then on the backside, what do you do at Kentucky? Do you have more embarrassing losses down the road? Are you still not able to score in some of those games with Kentucky? Maybe you get Southern Miss, Missouri at times.
If they lose to Kentucky, Vince, it's going to, Southern Miss game is going to look like Derek Dooley's games at the end. The Missouri game where there was about 52,000 there against Missouri at the end of Derek Dooley.
And you're right, but I think if you're looking for a Sunday move, it'd have to be an embarrassment plus an empty stadium type. They weren't going to fire him on Sunday after South Carolina. I mean, that countdown is ridiculous. Tennessee is not in a hurry to do this. You're not going to beat anyone that Chip Kelly doing it in the middle of the year. Tennessee, if at all possible, is going to let this ride out. If they absolutely tank the rest of the way and don't win again or only win one game, then maybe towards the end, the last game or two, you could see something if the stadium is already half empty a game or two. But until then, they're going to let this play out, see what happens. But short of a shock the world of Alabama, I don't see how you're going to get enough wins and show enough progress to change what's out there with not only just the fans, but I think the key people that are going to that other side of venting their frustration as well.
Vince, hope you get to feeling better. You were good. I didn't think you were that salty. I think you were good. Good stuff. Opinionated. We like that.
Yeah, I appreciate it. There's more salty in me. I guess I just didn't do a good enough job of bringing it out. So.
I thought it was perfectly fine. Hey, good to talk to you. Have a great week.
All right, same here. Thanks, guys.
Vince Ferrara, WNML in Knoxville. Good stuff from him, as always, at Vince Sports on Twitter. Give him a follow. I think if they lose to Kentucky, we know what's going to happen this weekend. If they lose to Kentucky in Lexington, I think tickets will be readily available anywhere you want for basically any price. I saw people on Twitter Saturday saying they were getting in, walking up, grabbing tickets off the street for $20 and walking in and watching the game against South Carolina. It'll be way worse for Southern Miss if they lose to Kentucky. Way worse.
When the stadium is that big, that doesn't surprise me. That's the issue you get when your stadium is so big that even when your team is decent, it's got to be hard to fill that many seats every week, especially in this day and age with what we've talked about, how easy it is
to hang
at home.
They haven't had that problem, really.
Well, they have, if you look.
Not really.
Oh, I think if you look.
I'm saying under Butch Jones, they've been filling it up every game.
I don't know about filling it up every game, depending on the game. Big game against South Carolina, yes. Non-conference games, I think you can get in there pretty easy. I'm just saying it's a challenge to fill 110,000, whatever they've got now, in this era.
It's just over 100.
I looked
down
at the Florida Swamp the last several times I've watched games down there. That top section that's relatively new.
Available.
Remember, every stadium seemed like, well, we got to make the stadium bigger. There's been a lot of teams in the SEC especially. I think if they could do it over again, they might choose to, maybe 80,000 is enough.
At the time you understood, but
right.
Now those days are gone.
Yeah, bigger, it's hard to fill those upper deck seats.
Not better. We'll come back, give you a chance to win tickets to see the Predators and the Avalanche tomorrow, and also talk about what happened in Chicago on Saturday night. Also, Sean McDonough will join us. He'll be in the booth tonight calling the Titans-Colts game. He will join us to kick off the fourth and final hour of 3D 102.5 The Game.